Hey, thank you for choosing to spend some time with us here at Awake the Iron. These podcasts are also posted as videos on our website, so be sure to visit awaketheiron.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the Awake the Iron Academy. You'll never be bored again as you explore vast archives of videos, interviews, documents, lectures, humor, and more, covering an ever-increasing range of topics. Think of it like a self-guided, self-paced college, but without the mountains of debt. We would also love to hear from you, and you can do that two ways, either through the website contact form, or leave us a voice message by calling the Awake the Iron hotline. That's 601-654-IRON. This episode of Awake the Iron is brought to you by Arch City Roofing. For the best roof replacement in Central Ohio, call 614-207-4650. Arch City Roofing is booking now. Get 10% off during April. Call 614-207-4650 now for 100%, no hassle, no pressure, completely free estimate. Arch City Roofing, 614-207-4650.
What are you drinking?
Got some hot tea here.
Nice.
One of the culprits for all the myocarditis going around, apparently. So I better be careful with it.
All right. Welcome back to another segment of Awake the Iron. I'm your host, Kason Pratt. And with me, as usual, is CJ, the Lion of Losanniville. And we have an extra special guest with us today. His name is David Whitehead. Appreciate you being with us, David. Thanks a lot. And I'm excited to talk to you. And you'd do a better job of introducing yourself. So I'll let you do that now. Just tell everybody, like, you know, what you're into, where you're from, and, you know, anything else you want to add.
Well, first of all, thanks, gentlemen, for having me on your show. You guys are doing a great job, and I'm excited to have this chat. I'm honored to be here because what I've been doing over the last few years during all this madness is trying to collect all my notes on all these different subjects that we're going to talk a little bit about today that I learned from just great teachers and people that have dedicated their lives to this. And I've collected it because I've had personal experiences in my life that motivated me to do this work, which is I do public podcasting, I do digital media, I do made-at-home documentaries. Hopefully soon I want to get my own budget and do some legit documentary films in the future. I just love digital media as a medium for communicating this information. And I've been doing this research of all these different subjects that are related to this documentary series that I've been working on. I've been doing this research for probably around 18 years. And it had to do with experiences I was going through, you know, growing up. My mother was in and out of the hospital my whole life, had a lot of health issues. And I started to see that they were getting worse the more she was going to see these various doctors and do these surgeries and take all these medications, you know. So as a kid, I was motivated to try to find out, well, why is that? Why is it that not only my mother, but so many other people probably watching this right now, know people or themselves have experienced something like that, where they're going to the solution that we're presented, and yet things aren't improving. They're getting worse. They're getting other problems. They're losing a lot of finances and all these different things. So I went, okay, I have to learn more about this. And then, you know, you fall down a few rabbit holes, you do some research, and that's why I do the podcast that I do. It's called Truth Warrior, and I cover current events, politics. I talk about philosophy. I'm also a martial artist by trade. I was almost forced to retire from my martial arts business, teaching martial arts and fitness and whatnot. I was almost forced to retire because of this pandemic, because it shut down our school right away. My wife and I, you know, we've been running that, and we've been entrepreneurs since about 2008, and that destroyed us. And I thought, oh, this is it. No one's ever going to want to touch each other ever again, let alone sweat and bleed with each other and hug each other and wrestle with each other. So I thought, oh, okay, I'm just going to dedicate full-time work into this podcast, into doing the research. And then, you know, but luckily I'm able to soon reopen my martial arts practice as well and get back to that. So that's my main trade. This digital media research podcasting thing kind of came over time as a hobby. And then it soon turned into a career and a mission and a, you know, something that I just was passionate about. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. That's what I do. I produce shows every week. I also host or co-host a show with my good friend, Josh Reed. We do a show called Earth Chronicles. It airs on Badlands Media on Rumble every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific. I also do, I keep myself pretty busy. I do a research project with the great Michael Tessarian from Ireland and the U.S. He lives, you know, in the U.S. now. And he and I have been doing a podcast called Unslaved. And it's a premium show. There's a fee behind the whole project because it's completely off all the main platforms. It's custom made. And we have an amazing group of people and we produce unique content there. And that's at unslaved.com. So I do a little bit of all of those things. And it's because honestly, in the end, I'm just a normal guy that wants to know the truth about some of these very deep and complex issues and questions and challenges. I started off by just that philosophical question, who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? What the hell kind of planet did I end up on and what's happening on it? And then it's just gone from there. So I don't say I have the truth. My show is called Truth Warrior because that's my, what I'm aspiring towards. I want to try to do what I can to try to pull back the veil of deception and see what the truth is. So that's really what I'm trying to accomplish. And there's my whole life story in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think we're cut from the same cloth in that regard. We say on this show all the time that I could be wrong, but I'm not a liar. And I'm trying to get to the truth. And that's all I'm interested in, you know. And also, we say a lot, you know, don't believe anything I'm saying, you know. We might just show people some doors that we've looked through, and you know, you need to look for yourself and you know, verify things. And you talked about going down some rabbit holes, and we know what that's like. And you talked about your business and almost being closed. I think I'm picking up on your accent, though. You might be Canadian, is that right?
I did. Hey, that's great. I still have a Canadian accent after all these years. Yes. Born and raised, proud Canadian patriot. Shout out to all those awesome Canadian truckers that tried to win back our freedom and were actually successful in the end. But yeah, mm-hmm. Born and raised in Canada. I've lived all over. I've traveled this country many times and I currently live in British Columbia.
Okay. Yeah. Are you? This is kind of a dumb question. Are you a hockey fan?
I am a hockey fan, although it's been a while. Right? You know what? I let my heart get crushed by the Toronto Maple Leafs for too many years and it just turned me away. But I love the sport. I grew up playing it on backyard ice rinks that we would make. And it's just such a great sport. It's too bad they got rid of Don Cherry over a bunch of nonsense, but we still love the man and we still love the sport. And I know it's huge in America as well. And we love playing you guys because you guys have really awesome players out there also.
So, yeah. sorry, I was going off on a little tangent. Yeah. Cause I like hockey too, but, the Canada thing, I hear so much about, some really bad stuff about Canada through I don't even like to use the word, but the pandemic, I'll put it in quotes, you know, we have our own thoughts about that, but there was bad stuff everywhere as far as government and, you know, people acting crazy. But you know, was it like because of what am I trying to say, like you getting shut down for, you know, because you can't touch people or get close? I mean, is that the gist? And were some things as bad, like is Trudeau, you know, as bad as we're hearing and that kind of stuff? You know, what do you think?
Yeah, you're hearing a lot, and I'd say probably a lot of it's accurate. It's been, see, they shut us down like they shut everybody else down in what was that, February, March 2020. I actually, at the time, real quick, my story with that was I was going back and forth to LA doing shoots for some work I was doing with History Channel. And I think I caught something on the way back, because as soon as I got back from this one trip, this was February 2020, I got hit with something that I had never been hit with before, and it knocked me on my ass for about 7 or 8 days. Now, survivable, uncomfortable, all the symptoms that they were saying at the time, with the shortness of breath, the body aching, the whole like very intense process. I had it, then my whole house had it immediately, then the whole, and it was like people were already getting something. Who knows what, who knows where, we don't have to do that right now, but I something happened. And, but I knew right away, I'm like, this is just another variation of the flu. And, you know, even though it was pretty brutal, like, but I saw the reaction from the government, and then I saw it go around the world. And then I saw them censoring doctors and experts right out of the gate. And I went, okay, something's up here. This is very interesting. This is not what they're telling us. But that was my experience. Right away, they shut our dojo down because all the fitness facilities got shut down. All the small business, everybody got shut down. They were even in Canada shutting down churches. They were even shutting down drive-in services for churches that where people were driving in, like a drive-in movie theater, and they'd go there and they're literally just sitting in their isolated minivans listening through the speakers. And they all got kicked out by the police, and a couple of them got arrested, and the pastor got arrested for hosting that service. That was early on. Then they had an issue where one of the churches in, oh my God, is it Manitoba, I believe? One of the churches tried to resist the mandates and allow for the people to come to a service. And they tried to do certain protocols. They even tried to do some of them, but they were like, no, people still need this, probably now more than ever. And they sent 200 armed police officers to fence the entire place off, shut it down, kick everybody out, and again, issue arrests and fines. Then, you know, gyms tried to push back and say, you guys have no solution for us. You're going to make us wait for, because at that time we thought a traditional vaccine would take 5 to 7 years minimum, right? So they're like, are you seriously going to tell people they can't exercise for 5 to 7 years? And yet there's a flu going around, regardless of what it is, your best defense for your immune system is to heat up your body, exercise, move, and that motivates you to eat healthier, you know, get that vitamin C, all those things. People were pushing a natural approach to doing something in the meantime, right? And they were still shut down. And then it ended up becoming a policy of being mandated, which was, this happened all over the world, but it got specifically vicious in Canada because there was direct violation of our mobility rights as defined by our charter, which is like our constitution. And so they were violating our ability to travel freely within provinces first. And obviously we couldn't leave the country and come back unless we had, this is fast forwarding now, unless we had these jabs. So they started with the mask mandates and everything else. They shut everybody down. Even when people started opening back up, most of those business owners were destroyed and put into permanent debt, and they couldn't come back. They were a small business, right? Yet Walmart, Target, Costco, all the other guys, BlackRock and Vanguard, they all got to stay open. And that was immediately to me where you have Walmart up the road from that church that probably only holds maybe 150 people max. And at no time was there probably even more than 50 people. You've got thousands of people going in and out of Costco and Walmart up the road, like all day, you know? So that those kind of things were what was going on. And all of that pressure led up to some of these truckers. A lot of them did end up getting vaccinated in the beginning, but they didn't like the force that was being used. And they didn't like the fact that Canadians were flying back into their country and then being detained in hotels against their will. Like essentially these hotels were turned into like prisons. You couldn't leave. You would be arrested if you left the hotel past the quarantine period that was issued for literally everybody, regardless of anything. So you're like, oh my God, the truckers were then going, well, we're not all of us are vaccinated, and we don't want to have to show digital papers in order to go back and forth because we're going over the border all the time. Mm-hmm. And they were seeing this with the American truckers also, they were having this issue. And truckers are like salt of the earth, hard work and good people. And even if only say 20% of them didn't get any shots, they were all like, we still support our brothers for their right to choose. So we're going to go to battle for them. And that's how that started. It started with just truckers going, screw this. This is bullshit. And we're not going to take this lying down. So they started it, but then it became even bigger because it hit like 11 million Canadians right in the heart and just brought us all out in all the towns and all the provinces and all the major cities, even the small towns. There were people on overpasses. There were protests happening at the legislative buildings in all these different provinces and cities, including where I was. Then there was a massive cross Canada. Like, imagine thousands of people driving across the major highways with the truckers all the way across the massive landscape of Canada that takes you like 8 days to get from where I am to Ottawa through snow, through winter. Like, it was an epic thing. And what that was about was it was the truckers getting behind the people, because they knew that at that point, according to official data — this is just the official data, which I think is probably also bullshit — but they had said something like, there's still like 6 or 7 million Canadians that are not vaccinated. So that's the population. That means 6 to 7 million people, which I think it was more than that, because there was also a lot of people that got the jab under coercion, right? Remember, a lot of people, they didn't believe in it. They're like, okay, I guess we're guinea pigs now. And they just submitted and did it. But it did it under coercion and psychological pressure. And then there was the people that were just like me, like, absolutely effing no, I'm going to my grave. Like, if I have to here, this is not what we're doing. And either way, the whole country, the amount of people that came around, the truckers and the people who were literally losing everything due to the policies of the government, not due to COVID, due to the policies of the government, the mandates of the government, the coercive expansion of power of the government. People were suffering because of that. And they went, we've lost everything. We're going to drive to Ottawa and we're going to set up some hot tubs and we're going to pull out some bouncy castles and we're going to have hugs and concerts. And we're going to be the opposite of this dark bullshit that's going on in our world. And we're going to celebrate our freedom. We're going to celebrate our country, even if it's falling to pieces right now. And we're going to come together and we're going to tell Justin Trudeau and all the clowns in office that we know are working for globalist interests that are not Canadian or not American. You guys know what's up. We are going to let our voices and the horns of our truck be heard until there's a conversation that happens. Because here's the issue to anybody that would say, oh, the truckers were annoying and they were, because there's still a lot of anti-trucker people, right? In Canada, especially. I would say, look, you know, it's like, pick your protest. There's protests for all kinds of things in Ottawa all the time. All the time there's protests going on for something. We had the Summer of Love, just like you guys did, with Antifa going through and burning down cities. We didn't get quite as intense here, but there was massive BLM marches. There was climate marches. There was, our prime minister went out during the pandemic with thousands of people surrounding him, and he got on his knee as a sign of support for the George Floyd movement and the whole thing. Yet when Canadians came together to protest the mandates of the government and the anti-scientific approach and the deaf ear of the government, not wanting to hear from actual scientists that had different data, that was obviously because we were rebelling against the actual government. That's no, and that's got to get squashed. So they squashed that. And when the whole thing happened, I did an 8-hour live stream that day when they rounded up. So the truckers were there for just over 3 weeks. All the people were there. I knew friends that were down there. People went down there and saw for themselves that the media and everything they said about it was total nonsense. It was a total lie. And that woke up a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, given that we had the massive long-standing push in Canada for the first time that I've ever seen and that anybody I know has ever seen, that was the most peaceful, non-violent, sustained party that we've ever had for freedom. Literally, the slogan is mandate freedom. And for the media and the government to call us Nazis, racists, bigots, homophobes, and every name you can say, it's, and then they, all they do is just, we're not going to listen to you. We're not going to have a conversation. We had top doctors go and ask Health Canada, who is a taxpayer-funded organization, to come and address the scientific challenges that they had as scientists, as virologists, as biostatisticians, right? And they're like, we have data to present to you that you're not looking at, and we want to see your counter data so that we can clear this up. Because if you can do that, everybody will just go home and it's all good. But the government doesn't show up. So then we're like, okay, they don't even want to talk to us. And this is... there's got to be at that time around 10 to 11 million Canadians behind the movement, not in Ottawa, but behind the movement. We had support from the US. People, donating to the movement as well. Like, just everybody got behind this. It's global support all over the world. In New York, they had Canadian flags being waved at the Canadian embassy there in support. And yet for Justin Trudeau and his cronies, just to give you an idea of who this person is, a narcissist, sadist, sociopathic dictator, he is the worst kind because he's like that fuzzy kitten version, right? And he comes out and he just starts calling us a bunch of names, slandering us, making us look like we're some kind of domestic terrorist group. We do an inquiry, a public inquiry. That's part of the law. They have to do that. And of course, the commissioner, who's a major supporter of the Liberal Party of Canada, ends up ruling in the favor of the government in doing what they did, which is send in the Gestapo to curb stomp a bunch of families who've lost everything already to beat up veterans. Imagine this. Imagine American veterans showing up to the wounded soldier or the statue that represents the statue of the flag being planted after World War II. And the police go and beat them up and haul them off into vans and drop them off on the outside of the city to freeze in minus 40 weather. What would happen? Well, you guys had January 6th. You've had your own, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, this is what went down. This is what's going on in our country. It's really fresh. That's why I'm kind of passionate about it. Because we need to make something happen really quick in this country, or we are literally going towards a Venezuela style dictatorship if we're not there already, you know? So there's Canada in a nutshell.
So David, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was like a Rockefeller or Rothschild or something who said something like, I don't care if they protest, let them, as long as they pay their taxes or something. So I'm always like, I'm not anti-protest, but I'm always skeptical. Like, is that really going to do anything? Like, oh yay, change it. And then they're like, okay, yeah, whatever. We're still going to do it. So did it do anything, or what do you think?
And I hear you. And here's my rebuttal to that is, this isn't for the government. This particular protest, first of all, was probably made up of 90% people that have never gone to a protest in their life. You know, like, I don't go to protests either. I feel you. Okay. But this is a different kind of war right now. This isn't about doing a protest for what protests are supposed to be for, which is to cause political change. This is for doing a protest to put a flag in the ground during one of the darkest times of history in Canada and saying, you're not alone, to save people, because the suicide rates at that time in Canada were skyrocketing 5 to 6 times the normal amount. Okay. And even that normal amount was already high. We were already concerned about it. So I think what this did, and this is what did it for me too, because in Canada at that time, I was literally talking to my wife about, like, where are we going to flee to? Where are we going to go? Right. And then you realize, oh, this is a global thing. I mean, maybe it's a little bit better in Florida right now, but that could also have its other problems, right? Like, but when the truckers hit the road, just normal, like farmers, cowboys, truckers, hockey moms, like just, it was just a moment that I still get goosebumps thinking about. And it was for us. It was a movement where we were locked down in our homes. We were told to sit and heal and obey like dogs. We were put under 24 hours mind control and, you know, just fear porn 24/7. Kids are committing suicide at this point. And so we're like, okay, someone needs to blast the trumpets and light the pyres and kick the tires and do something, because otherwise all hope is lost. And so when those trucks screamed out of the dark, snowy night, I'm sorry to get dramatic here, but let me just paint the picture that is in my mind about it. When they came out and they shone their light of, we're just average folk that are just going to, we don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. We don't want to be violent. We don't want to break laws, but we also can't just sit here and do nothing. So this is the best we got. Let's rally behind it and show the world and show Canada that if you're sitting at home being against what's happening and you know in your heart that it's wrong, you're not alone. And you know what that did is it woke up way more people than before. And you know what's happening now? And I tell this to even the people that have lost hope after that whole thing fell apart and all the inquiry failed and everything else. I say, no, it succeeded because all of Canada watched how Trudeau reacted to that. And even if they didn't agree with the argument of the trucker groups and the Freedom Convoy, they didn't think it justified that level of China-style, heavy-handed, just kibosh, right? Sending in the horses literally to trample the people. And and the way they reacted, and then the way Trudeau gaslit everybody and has lied repeatedly and tried to slander everybody instead of being a unifier, right? Everybody's watching this. And so the truckers was a jab in the gut of this Canadian deep state to say, we're going to show everybody you're not as powerful and you're not all you think you are. We don't all agree. And that gave a tremendous wake-up call to Canada. It's the first big one we've ever had, mind you. We're a young country. We didn't have to fight a revolution to win our, we didn't even want to become a country. We did like basically coerce and bribe all the other provinces to join in the Federation. So it's just, that's why I defend it. But I also, CJ, I also hear your argument of like, in general, that is my policy also. Protesting, what are you doing? Like the best protest is to be the change you want to see and let your voice speak the truth and change, you know, but this, I feel like I'll give this one an exception. You know, that's what I think.
Well, and that's a good point. And actually it did give me hope because I saw and heard about things going on in Canada during the scamdemic. And I was like, man, those people up there, like, are they all really just, they're just going to believe all this crap? And, you know, and so when I heard about all that with the truckers, I'm like, okay, there's some people up there that are,
yeah,
it's not just what the media is saying, you know, that, oh, all the Canadians are, you know, they're staying home and they're not doing anything and they're, you know, trying to save lives or whatever.
Yeah, we're not all as well-behaved and prim and proper as the world likes to think. And, you know, although I got to say, that was literally the most polite protest I've ever witnessed. So, and they still call it a terrorist. So I feel like for some of the other protests that have been a little more rough, I'm like, doesn't matter what you do, they're going to try to make you look like you're something you're not. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the cult of medics.
Sure.
And all of this is related, of course, but I watched the first five and wow, it's a lot. So, and a lot of it, you know, I kind of know a lot of that stuff already. But yeah, when I watched the first one, I was like, and I took notes, I was like, man, this is basically like a giant teaser maybe for the rest of them, you know, because you talked about like the committee, Council of 300, shadow government, cults, and like pharma and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, let's get into it, right? And then the next ones you start to get into it more.
Charles Fort was an American writer and researcher who specialized in anomalous phenomena. In the early 1900s, he made a very interesting statement. He said, "I think we're property. I should say we belong to something. That something owns this earth, all others warned off. And that all of this has been known, perhaps for ages, to certain ones upon this earth. A cult or order, members of which function like bellwethers to the rest of us, or as superior slaves or overseers, directing us in accordance with instructions received from somewhere else in our mysterious usefulness." Is there anything to this? Let me tell you a story.
But I wanted to bring this up because we were talking about the past couple of years with mandates and stuff. I thought it was interesting, masks, like putting a mask on your face. You were saying it's kind of like a ritual of slavery, right? Yeah. So I think that this happens where they find ways of making people think, you know, the purpose is something else. And really they just want us to participate in a ritual. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. It's so the way I think of it now is, they have to give people a talisman. They have to give people a symbol that represents the concept that they want to install in the public mind. And the reason I started framing my whole documentary series around the idea of cults was because at the time that right before the pandemic hit, I was doing a lot of research on different cults. Especially I was focusing on a lot of these like California cults, Jim Jones and or he was, well, he went out to Jonestown eventually. And then you had Heaven's Gate and some of these other ones. And I saw a blueprint of how they operate and how they get mass conformity around a figure, a symbol, or an idea. And the first thing they do is they strip you of your identity. This is the first thing you do. You break down, they call it breaking down the ego and trying to penetrate to your true self. But really it's just psychological stripping, where they're just stripping your psyche down to the mind of a child again, so that you're sort of forgetting and erasing everything you think you know. And in some cases, this can be positive, but in the case of a cult that's just trying to manipulate, it's to strip you down of your unique identity, so that you become more malleable, so you can become part of a group mind. That's the whole point. If you have any individualistic tendencies to think for yourself, oh, I'm the one with my hand up asking questions of the leader, the divine leader, you are a threat to the cult and the continuity of the cult. So in my opinion, when I looked at this masking thing, and I started to realize I know some of the scientists here in Canada, I started to form some good relationships because I was doing podcasting and interviewing, and I was already doing research into medical field and the pharma industry and everything else. So I contacted certain guys like Denny Rancourt, who's a Canadian, he was a Canadian professor that was fired for not going along with all the nonsense. Got a bunch of other scientists together to comb through all the research that had been done on the efficacy of masks, just to find out if they worked. That was all he did in the beginning. And they combed through and they couldn't find any literature on it. And anything they found was like just sloppy and conclusive, you know, which was why for the longest time, they never responded with universal masking of the public. And then I went, that's interesting. We've got top level scientists here that are conducting peer review research together to try to go through what the literature is, and they're coming up with a goose egg, yet the government is saying we have all the science, but really they're just listening to Fauci, and they're all listening to the World Health Organization guidelines, and who runs those guys? Like, who really rocks that place? And so you go through this and you go, all right, if I could prove or at least suggest to the audience that there's no benefit to the mask in relation to stopping this particular virus, illness, disease, whatever, poisoning, bioweapon, whatever it is, okay? That mask does nothing. And actually, if you heard the original recordings of what Fauci had said, and also even in Canada, we had a doctor here who is my provincial leader here, Bonnie Henry, she said also that if we universally mask healthy people, we're going to actually cause more spread of this disease because nobody's fitted properly. Nobody's trained how to use it. The thing becomes damp within the first 20 minutes. So unless you're changing your mask every 20 minutes in a bio waste hazardous container that seals it off so that it's not spreading around, if this is really legit the way they're saying, and on, they were saying these kinds of things that, oh, and people would touch their mask to adjust it and then go and touch the debit machines and the coffee mugs. It's so hilarious if you're to go with the sort of typical way that they look at the spread of disease, that these are the things they're going to do: fiberglass partitions and these little paper masks that are basically like a chain link fence trying to stop you throwing sand through it. And then you go, and you're also restricting breathing. Now we get into hypoxia. Now we get into some of the health risks. We also get into the psychological effects of this thing. And especially on children, you know, children at a certain age, they need, for developmental purposes, so they don't become a sociopath, they need to see people's faces and they need to develop empathy. It's essential. So you're, for 3 years, there's babies that were born to friends of mine, I'm sure yours too, who grew up looking at masked human faces everywhere. And you think that's not going to cause a problem? Like, we could. So then we're like, okay, let's weigh the risk benefit ratio of how much does it really stop versus the damage it's doing just psychologically, just starting there, right? So you put that all on the table. And the reason I'm rolling it out is because that's how you get to this, where I said, okay, if the purpose of the mask is not to protect the population the way they said it was, then what is the purpose? And if you realize that the entire way that this thing rolled out was essentially a mass psychological operation, and all the blueprints are there, right? well, they understand what's Edward Bernays called the group mind or the public mind. They understand how that comes into being, where you have a bunch of individual minds that willingly shut off the individual thought and will hook themselves into what they call a group mind, where all they need to do is implant thoughts, ideas, and beliefs into the group mind. And then it just, everybody's under mass hypnosis, essentially. We call it mass formation psychosis. You can call it whatever you want. And they tested this out in things like the Ash experiment, the conformity experiments. They've done MK Ultra experiments and all the subcategory experiments that were involved with that, brought to you by Quebec, Canada, by the way. And you know, you all these other experiments and knowledge that they have about how to literally manipulate the mind of an individual or a group so that they behave against their own will and do the bidding of the people that are putting that idea into their mind. It's very much like hypnosis, but it's done on a mass scale. And so what better tool than to have a symbol that represents the boogeyman that we need to defend against under the guise of this is going to help you, even though here's all the science to show that we've never done this before for a reason. And so then you go, well, if there is a, they know how to build branding, like brands, like big international brands, to get everybody to jump into it. You could look at brands as a form of a cult, right? The same principles apply. And so I went, they're trying to create a global cult because then they can get mass conformity. That's really all they want. So if you want mass conformity without deviation of all these individuals, like all these doctors raising their hand to go, hold on a minute, this isn't science. You don't want that. You need mass conformity. You need a symbol to drive the movement. They know this. So the symbol of the pandemic was the mask. It wasn't even the jab. It was the mask. Nobody would have took the jab had they not already been trained like Pavlov's dog with the mask and the social and the whole thing. And so, and they called it new normal and this whole deal. So I started to go, well, where else have we seen this type of thing? If we look at religious cultures around the world and various cults, for example, there's this strange thing that pops up, not everywhere, but in a lot of places, where there's this idea that you have to cover your face to show contrition and submissiveness to the gods. Okay. Now, if let's just put out the hypothesis that what if we're dealing with a sort of elite cult that sees themselves as the rightful progenitors and rulers and the ones who are the intelligent elite that are going to save humanity and guide us in our evolution and all this. If they view themselves like that, they view themselves as gods. They view themselves as the little gods, right? And so they look at themselves as, well, we are the ones that have all the money, power, resources, and knowledge. So therefore, we're going to tell you what to do. And so they need everybody to be submissive to them. And they need something that's effective in achieving that. So you start with something really scary, something that's invisible. That's really important. And then you just keep pumping out repetition over and over and over again. The same phrases, the same headlines, the same images, the same scare tactics. And eventually all you got to do, which is what happened, is say, here, guys, here's some free ice cream. Come and jab up your kids with our experimental gene therapy that we've never used on humanity before and that killed all the animals in the animal trials.
Next, we've got a refreshing story for you. Today is a Pfizer day at a community vaccination site at 510 29 and a half Road. Mesa County Public Health handed out coupons today to kids aged 12 to 15 who got a COVID-19 vaccine to redeem at Graff Dairy for a free ice cream cone. Graff Dairy, a locally owned restaurant and dessert bar, partnered with Mesa County Public Health to encourage vaccination in Mesa County's youth. Darren Carre, owner of Graff Dairy, says, quote, we have to protect our kids to make sure they can safely attend summer camps, enjoy a summer with their friends, and make lasting memories. I want to do this to make sure we can all have a summer full of the activities and events that Western Colorado is known for, end quote.
And everybody goes, oh, look at that, Johnny. You can save yourself from the big boogeyman of fear and get a free ice cream cone. And that's all it takes. Well, for us to get to that point takes a process. And my question was, what's the process? And then I thought, as I was thinking that, I'm like, it's funny that there's actually a cult called The Process. So some interesting things to get into. I don't know what else you were asking about that, but I hope that answered your question.
Well, that was CJ's question, but that was a great answer, and a lot in there that could be unpacked, of course. And I think what I wanted to kind of let people know about the Cult of the Medics, the docuseries, which is fantastic, by the way. I will admit I haven't completed it. I'm about four chapters in. And I didn't.
It's just getting good, boys. You got to keep going. It's just.
I can
good.
Tell. And it is. It's so filled. It's so dense. There's just so much, and it's the quality, the production quality is top drawer, man. I'm not just saying that. It's excellent, but it is like, this is the problem I have. Not with that. The problem I have is there's so much info like what you present in the series that if you've done research for a long time, CJ and I have done, you have done, I don't even know where to begin when I talk to, I'm just going to use the word a normie. Okay. I talk to a normie. And it's like, yeah, we got to wear a mask if we want to go into, you know, Walmart. And they're just doing it. And they're like an NPC. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know where to begin, because the subject goes so deep, so deep. You know, like you're bringing in, you know, the Rockefellers, you're bringing in banking families. You know, you're bringing in cults. I finished chapter four, which talked... Chapter four starts out with human sacrifices, and I'm watching this and I'm going, okay, you know, I can hang on and see where this is going. And and I'll be honest, there's not a lot anymore that is jaw dropping to me, just because when you go down rabbit holes, you experience a lot of that. Hmm. But your series has some jaw droppers for me, and I consider myself not a normie. So that's
a huge compliment, man. Well, and I'm glad it does.
Well, you connect the dots, which I find that happens. Let's say I'm researching some topic that has nothing to do with this over here, but then you come across that little tidbit that connects those, and you're going, and so you make a connection. I call it through the back door, kind of, and you're going. And I'm like, oh, I was down that rabbit hole like 5 years ago. Mm. And you mean that connects to that? You know, like, for example, certain people or families that kind of pop up, right? That are in everything. You're like, wait a minute, I was suspicious of this thing here. But now I know these people are involved. And I didn't know that at first. I'm like, there's something here. And I don't know what it is, you know, but... So I'm not even sure exactly where I was going with that, but I wanted to just let the people watching or listening know that this docuseries, Cult of the Medics, is 9 chapters. It's dense. It's like a spider web. And it encompasses more than just medicine, is maybe the point I'm getting to. And that's such an understatement that it's at the root of almost everything. And so the casual person, you know, I want to encourage anyone to watch it, of course, but the casual person is going to need to buckle up and be like,
I feel bad. There's, a bit, yeah.
There's some, you know, there's some real tough things. And when you go looking for the truth, you kind of have to, and if you're honest with yourself, that's a big thing. If you're going to be honest with yourself and say, okay, well, I'm just going to see what's going on here. And there isn't too much anymore that I won't try to look at with an open mind. You know, if you made some outlandish claim, whatever it is, I'm less likely to dismiss it offhand anymore, judging by what I've learned. Because when you actually look, you find out some disturbing things. You got to go, okay, well, if it's true, then, you know, I'm going to have to go with that. But, so where to begin, describing like what it, can you just like sum up The name obviously has some clues in it, and CJ's question that you answered great. But can you sum up in like a few sentences what the docuseries is?
Well, really good, and I'm glad it's had some mind explosions. I'm just sharing all of my mind explosions that I've had all over the years and my clippings, and I'm not even trying to say this is it. This is just my unique remix. I feel like I'm like a DJ kind of remixing this information in a unique way to go, what happens if we put all this shit on the table at the same time and just sit back and look at it, like, and play around with it? Like, what if there's something bigger? So in a way, I'm trying to recruit people to help me with this, and like researchers out there like yourselves or anybody else listening that sees one of the breadcrumbs that's in there and goes, oh, I'm going to follow up on that. And I'm going to go start diving in. Who is this Knights of Malta? Like, let's go look at their history, or who's the Club of Rome, or who's this person, or even some of the philosophy I bring in, you know, maybe I'll go read some Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who survived the gulags of Russia, or I'll go read some of these thinkers that are there. I try to make it a mix of light and dark. You know, you're not just learning about ancient rituals and sacrifices and all that stuff and cults and all the weird stuff that goes, you're learning also about hopefully the solution. But that said, my elevator pitch is this.
All right. Well, that's all the time we had for part one of this segment. Be sure to tune in next time for part two. And be sure to check out awaketheiron.com for the full video experience.